Hello, world. Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 182. I'm creator and host Don Hutchison. Every day I interview someone from around the world who has discovered his talents to do work he loves to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Today I'm delighted to bring you our featured guest, Phil Brangers. Welcome, Phil.
It's good to be here.
Thank you, sir. Phil, are you using your talents doing work that you love?
I am finally doing that again, yes.
Good. We want to hear everything about that. We want to hear the whole story. Phil is a jack of all trades, master of a couple. He has spent over 15 years as a freelance events production hand trying to find a way to integrate the work he loves with a wife and child. After adopting a son last year, he spent the last year moving from a life of on-location events that required long days and nights and a lot of travel to an attempted work-life balance. Okay, Phil, that's a pithy summation of your career. Tell us what you're up to now that has you engaged and excited.
Yeah, so right now I just started as the director of events for the Embassy Suites and North Charleston Convention Center with PDA, Production Design Associates. So basically I do all the lights, video, and sound when events come to the Charleston area, anything that happens at the convention center. I'm the guy that has my hands in that.
Wow. I can imagine Charleston's the wedding capital of the world, and I'm sure it's the convention capital of the world and for a lot of industries, right?
Yeah, it's getting there pretty quick. It's definitely a growing place.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful place. Okay, well, good. That sounds excellent. So, as you know, everyone's life is composed of turning points, and at these times, we face obstacles and opportunities and choices that determine the next 6 or 8 years of our lives. Take us as far back as you will, Phil, into your life story, your backstory, and tell us about the more memorable turning points in the life of Phil Brangers.
I guess I realized I was a very technical person when I was pretty young. I was one of the first kids on my block that had a computer. That's one thing I was very fortunate with is my dad always had a computer in the house. So even though it was mid to early 80s, we always had a computer in the house, which was pretty crazy back then.
Why did he do that? Why was he so fascinated with computers?
I think he's just a technical person. When I was younger, I thought it had to do with his job, but it didn't. That was an assumption I guess I made as a kid, but it had nothing to do with his job. It was just we always had a computer. So he just wanted one, I guess, which that's a trait that I have carried on into my adult life. I'm definitely the early adopter of things when I can afford them. But yeah, so when I was very young, we had a computer, played a lot of video games with my brothers. I was the youngest of three boys, youngest of four, but the sister didn't really get in on all of that very often. But the three of us boys liked to get into things, and being the youngest, it was very difficult for me to win, which I didn't like very much. So from a very young age, I found a way to manipulate the code in ways that allowed me to win. Specifically, the game that we played a lot was Guerrilla Wars, which was basically a game where you throw bananas at each other. But I found a way to manipulate the physics in such a way that I was able to win, and they didn't really know what was going on. So,
how did you do that? You simply have a mind that's wired to understand the code and everything, right?
Well, I guess that's definitely a little bit of it. DOS shell back then, when you would launch a game, something that was really cool was you actually just showed the code. So instead of launching a program, you just loaded the code into DOS shell and then launched. So it wasn't like everything wasn't encoded the way that it is now. So you were really just basically opening a text file and then it was running the code. So before you played the game, you always saw the code in front of you. And I guess I just started messing with stuff until it did what I wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, that was kind of the first step in realizing that I was a technical person. I didn't realize then what it would mean for me later, but it really kind of started helping build my brain in ways of logic and problem solving and that kind of stuff.
By the way, did your brothers ever get wise to you?
I don't think they did. So when they hear this, they might be kind of annoyed.
Okay.
I'm really not sure if that conversation ever happened. But at this point, they should have figured it out. But if they haven't, that's their own fault. But yeah, so growing up, my dad was a IRS agent, so there was a lot of talk in the house about money and that kind of stuff. So at about 15, I got my first job. I knew I had to earn my keep, so to speak. So I got my first job at Arby's, working, slicing roast beef, doing the thing. And so as most kids do, I went into food service pretty heavy, worked Arby's in high school, worked Waffle House in high school, delivered pizza, all that stuff. Discovered that I was really good at it, and so that just kind of carried on into college. And once I got to college, I became a computer science major.
You said you were really good at it. I've had in my past life as an advertising guy, I had fast food clients, and yeah, it's an incredibly demanding field, to say the least. What were you good at? What part of it were you good at? What did you understand?
I think at that point, I was a very good multitasker. So when I was working at Arby's, they always put me on the drive-thru because you have to be able to talk to one person while you're fixing somebody else's food and taking money from a third person. So I was always that guy that could do three things at once. Mm-hmm. And that kind of translated to Waffle House because, you know, you're cooking food while you're listening to the waitress and you're talking to the drunk guy behind you. Right. So at that point, it was all about multitasking for me. I later kind of got the idea that everything is customer service. And so as I continued in food, the idea of customer service became really big for me. And I think that really blossomed my career in food service. And that kind of is what made me so good at it. Like it wasn't anything that I specifically did. It was just kind of the way my brain functioned, helped me carry out the day-to-day tasks that other people couldn't really do in a way that they couldn't do them, I guess.
Yeah. You realize somehow early on, you just paid attention to the fact that the whole customer transaction was everything. You paid attention to that.
Yeah, if people aren't happy, there's no point in doing what you're doing.
Exactly. Okay.
Yes, from there, I kind of went to college. Was still working in food service. It wasn't as big a deal because everything was part-time and I was going to school. I was a computer science major for a little while, and that was 2002, 2003. So the internet had kind of started to change. Facebook had come around. Web 2.0 started happening, but it hadn't changed enough that code was what it is today. Like, I think if I were a computer science major now, I would be on a completely different track than I am currently, just because the world is a little bit different. But back then, when I looked at code, code wasn't fun. Like, when I was a kid, it was all about video games, and that's why I loved it. But all of a sudden, it became about databases and businesses and building software that makes businesses better. And that just wasn't fun. So I started looking at what I thought I wanted to do, which was this computer science thing and how I could make it more fun. And since Web 2.0 was happening, we had a lot more graphics happening on the internet. So I looked at the art department at my college. They had a web graphic design program, changed from computer science to web graphic design. I went over to the art department, and that was the point at which I kind of realized I was a little bit of a creative person. I definitely didn't enjoy being in the art department because at the end of the day, I am a technical person, but I realized that I'm a lot more creative than most of the other people that were in the computer science program, I guess you could say. It was funny because the computer science program was in the math department, so I was technically a math major at that point. And when I was a math major, they always talked about how I would answer questions creatively. Like, it wasn't the way they expected me to. I would kind of take the roundabout way to get to solutions. And then when I became an art major, everything I did seemed to be systematic. So,
oh, that's interesting.
I wasn't 100% anywhere that I belonged, so to speak. But I didn't last very long in the art department. I was at a school kind of in the middle of Eastern Kentucky. So the idea of an actual graphic design major that I was hoping for wasn't there. It was really an art program with a design class, basically. And they called it a graphic design major. So I definitely didn't want to paint and didn't want to draw for the rest of my life. So at that point, I kind of switched majors around. I think I had a total of 7 majors before I finished school. My last one was philosophy and religion, and then I just kind of dropped out. But at that point, I dropped out of school, and I went back to what I knew, what I was good at. I went back to food service. I managed for Waffle House for a little while, and then I got a job managing a Captain D's that we built up to be one of the highest grossing Captain D's in the Southeast. Multi-million-dollar store. I thought I loved what I was doing because I was making a whole lot of money and I was really good at it. But that was the point at which a girl that I had met in college, we had dated for a while, we decided to get married. She's actually a physical therapist, so she had finished up her doctorate. We kind of planned everything out timing-wise so that we wouldn't be married while she was still in school. We wanted to wait till she was done. And so she made more money than I did. And she wanted to move to Charleston, South Carolina. She had a job offer in Charleston. So I quit my job. We moved to Charleston and just kind of started over. And that was 2009.
I don't know enough about it. I've been around physical therapists and massage therapists, but how do you characterize the kind of work that your wife does?
So when we first moved down here, she actually just worked in a hospital. So she was inpatient physical therapy. So it was lots of people that had surgeries, that kind of stuff. But after she did it for a couple of years, she kind of discovered what she wanted to specialize in. And she started specializing in kind of the neurological components, vestibular stuff, and then specifically Parkinson's. Okay. And she became one of the foremost Parkinson's therapists in the Charleston area pretty quickly, actually.
That's a huge need, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. She's good at what she does.
Okay. All right. So I just wanted to fill that in. So then what happened next after y'all got together?
Yeah, so we got married, moved to Charleston. She got a job at a hospital, and went right back to what I knew, started looking for a job in food service. I landed a job with Atlanta Bread doing catering, and that lasted a couple months before she basically, we were just sitting around the dinner table one night, and she basically said, I can tell that you hate what you're doing. I think those were pretty obvious, or her pretty exact words. I don't know how we got to that point in the conversation, but that's what she said. And I was kind of taken aback because I didn't know that I hated it. But I guess just the way that I was when I got off work, she could tell I wasn't happy. So she basically said that I didn't need to work. She made plenty of money. We didn't have any kids at the time, so didn't have much bills wise. So I just stopped working. She basically told me to stop working until I figured out what I wanted to do. So it was a crazy point because I'd literally at that point been working for 11 or 12 years nonstop, basically at that point. So the idea of not having a job was just completely foreign to me.
When she said that, when she confronted you with in a very loving way that you obviously hate what you're doing, do you remember what you felt like at that moment?
I think I was actually probably kind of offended initially because I didn't realize that I hated it. And it kind of made me look at myself, like, what about me makes her think that I hate it? So it was almost made me analyze who I was being to her that made her feel that way. And it really only took me a couple days of not doing it to realize just how much I had hated it, because it was like there was a weight off of my shoulders, not having to go in every day and deal with angry customers and that kind of stuff. So yes, it was good to have just kind of that time to think about who I was and who I wanted to be and where I wanted to be. And so all along the journey, back in middle school, I had opportunities in my church to be involved with kind of the musicals and those cheesy productions that happen, in your normal Baptist church, and doing the lights and video and sound and that kind of stuff. And so off and on through high school and college, I had kind of done that as a hobby, getting jobs here and there, helping out. But it was never anything that I saw as a career, because nobody does that for a living. That's not a real job. Mm-hmm. At least that's what I thought at the time.
Right.
So if we fast forward back up to where we were in Charleston, I quit work, start looking around, and I actually found a production company in Charleston that was big. It was the biggest production company I'd ever seen in my life. The idea of a large scale production company didn't really exist to me at that time. I just thought those were people that follow bands around, do that kind of stuff. There isn't really a business that does this. And so all of a sudden, the idea of event production was presented to me. So I became an event hand with them, just freelancing. And all of a sudden, this thing that was a hobby and this thing that I just did to unwind was my job. It took, 2 or 3 weeks before I sat down at the dinner table with Jen and said, okay, we're going to figure out a way that this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. So I worked with them for several years now. I've been working with PDA.
Okay, let's take a break in that storyline. You know the statistics, we've talked about this, that around the world, researched for a couple of decades, most people are not what I call in their sweet spot. They're not in the flow of their career, just like you in fast food. I mean, you did it. You were damn good at it. You multitask. You were very good at it. You could multitask. You understood customer satisfaction, but it didn't light you up in terms of your abilities and skills and values and so forth. Why do you think people get stuck? How do they get stuck?
I think it's just really easy to focus on the fact that you have to have money every day. You have to have money to eat, you have to have money to live, you have to have money to have a house. And then it only gets worse once you have a family on top of that, because all of a sudden you have to have money for your wife to eat, and you have to have money for your kid to eat. And it's really easy to get stuck in that grind. So if you never have a chance to step out of it, you can't really ever stop. You're stuck on the hamster wheel, so to speak. If you don't run, you die. So it's, if you work to live, you live to work. So yeah, we just get stuck.
Okay. And how do you get unstuck? I mean, you were lucky enough that you had a loving wife that had some real insight into you, and that was amazing. Other people maybe aren't so lucky. So what do they do?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is to find somebody on the outside who can breathe into your life, and whether it's a friend or a family member, whatever it is, somebody that knows you well enough to basically call you out. Mm-hmm. Somebody to keep you accountable for who you're going to be. And I think it's really important to have these people, and not enough of us have somebody like that. And ever since that day with Jen, I've actually sought out other people. I have several other friends in my life who at any moment have permission to just tell me to quit being an idiot, basically, whatever I'm doing. So yeah, I think it's really important just to have other people around us who are able to breathe that into us.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I think you're right. So what happened next in your storyline?
Yeah, so worked for PDA for a little while, was freelance with them. Then I became an official quote-unquote part-timer, which basically just meant I worked for them before anybody else. And then I went full-time with them for a little while. And then we hit kind of a roadblock. Jen and I and my wife started talking about the future and what it was going to look like for us with a family. And we actually decided to adopt a son. So last year, November of 2014, we came home with a son from China. He's a really cool kid, but that meant a whole lot of change in our lives. It's funny to think about a moment when I was a 31-year-old person. I won't use the word man. I consider that the moment that I became a man, because even though I was a quarter of the way through my life, it definitely changes who you are. It's no longer just about you. It's about, like, he's the most important thing in our life right now. So as we started looking forward to that middle of 2014, we thought a lot about what we wanted. And so the first thing that we decided was we wanted to find a way for Jen to be a stay-at-home mom. That meant taking a huge chunk out of our salaries. And so we were okay with that. We figured out, you know, we would just have to cut back and all that was going to work out. And then we kind of looked at my job and it was like, oh, okay, how's this going to work? Because I was doing a job that required me to travel for months at a time. And even if I was at home, it was long nights and sometimes long weeks. I would just kind of set up cots at whatever event we were at. So I wasn't home a whole lot, and we knew that that was going to have to change. So actually, I just took a step back, because right then it was more important for me to have a job, especially in adoption, where we're bringing a four-year-old kid home, that adoption is basically legal kidnapping. That was a joke we made a lot while we were in China, was we went across the world, grabbed a kid, put him on a plane, and took him to the other side of the world. It feels a whole lot like kidnapping the first couple months you have the kid, because you don't speak the same language and nobody really understands what's going on. And it's just a whole lot of chaos. So it was really important for me to be home. So I actually just went and got a 9-to-5, had a buddy that worked in the apartment industry. He hooked me up with a job leasing apartments. And I did that for about 18 months. I did not hate that, but I did not like that. That's the only way I can really phrase it. It's probably something I could have done for the rest of my life and not been unhappy, but I would not have been fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And so just about a month ago, actually, I got a phone call from PDA, the company that I used to work for, and they had a job open at what's called in-house production. But basically, it's a hotel or a convention center, and they have equipment stored there and a couple of people who specifically work there. So it's as close to a 9-to-5 as you can get in the production world. So
wonderful.
Only work in that location, only work when stuff's going on at that location, always be in Charleston. It's awesome.
Oh, wonderful.
So that's where we are at the moment.
Wonderful, wonderful. That's just great news. Well, how would you boil down for listeners around the world the most powerful lessons from back in school and growing up to today about finding their journey, finding their path, getting in their sweet spot for their career and life? You've talked about mentors, but what else would you say to listeners? What other counsel would you give them?
Yeah, I think it's important to... I've done this for about the last 5 years, but every couple of years, I think it's important to just kind of pause and look back. If I had looked back earlier, I would have seen a lot of stepstones through my life that would have led me in a different direction. It was almost like I had these two paths that I would jump back and forth from. And if I had just stayed on the right one, I would have gotten to where I am a whole lot faster. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just important to kind of stop and look back at who you've been and what you're doing and just kind of analyze, you know, how things made you feel along the way. And did you like doing this thing? Did this thing fulfill you? Were you satisfied in this moment? Or did it make you want to pull your hair out? Like, mm-hmm. when you got home from work that day, did your wife enjoy the person that you were? Or did she want you to walk away and leave her alone? Mm-hmm. Like, what does the first part of your day make the last part of your day look like? Kind of stuff. So yeah. It's just important to kind of take a moment and see where you've been so you know where you're going.
Yeah, I think that reflection and quiet time is critical, and it's harder to come by these days.
Yeah.
You know, for in every possible way. Have there been books or resources that you have used throughout your career, throughout your life?
Yeah, most recently read a book by John Acuff, and there's two really big takeaways that I took from that book. The book's called Quitter by John Acuff, but he talks about all about his journey to how he quit the job that he hated. It's quite literally your podcast and a book. Not exactly, but you know what I mean. It's the journey from the job that he hated to the job that he wanted. So the big thing that he talks about through the book is if you really want your thing, whatever your thing is, if you want it to be successful, you have to do something that you don't necessarily love for a minute until your thing is ready. Because if you just quit doing the thing that you hate, the thing that you want, if it isn't ready, you're going to kill it because of all of the pressure that you're going to put on it.
That's perceptive. That's very perceptive.
So it's all about that moment. And it wasn't really a direct parallel for me because I wasn't working when I found my thing, but I feel like if I had dove straight into it head on, I think if I had been a full-time production hand up front, I wouldn't have made it. I think the hours would have killed me up front. And that's 100% true, just because I didn't love it yet. I didn't know I loved it yet. So doing it for 5 and 10 hours a week for 6 months made it possible for me to do it 60 and 70 hours a week through those really heavy times when I was just killing it a couple years ago. And it's, I don't know, it's just that idea of kind of proof in the buns before you bake them, however you want to phrase it.
Yeah, well said.
But yeah, and then there was, I'm not going to be able to remember the other one.
Well, tell us the concept.
Huh, I may have to go with the book. Just kidding.
Okay, so tell us about this amazing technological acumen and experience. So how do you use this amazing thing called the internet in your life and career?
I am addicted to Google. I use all things Google every day. Google Docs, Google Drive, the whole thing. Google Keep. I just love the way that everything works together. So I love Google. I can talk about Google for hours if you want to. Okay. It's actually kind of sad. And then beyond that, I really like stuff that's happening with Periscope right now, just the way the live streaming is changing. Something that not even 2 years ago was incredibly difficult, you now can just pull your phone out and cast to the entire world, and it's kind of crazy. Those are the biggies right now in my life that I'm using a lot. For large-scale stuff, I love Livestream for live streaming. What else? Obviously Gmail and all of its little things. And if people don't know, there is a lot more that Gmail does than email. So look into Gmail apps. Just throwing that out there.
Okay, good.
Yeah, just that kind of stuff. Obviously, social networking. I'm 10 hours away from my family, so Facebook is key when you have a four-year-old and grandma wants to see him. So.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. So what do you see happening in the life of Phil Brangers going forward in the next few years? You've got this exciting new position that's going to allow you to do what you love and also gives you a schedule that you can live with. That couldn't be more exciting.
Yeah, so beyond PDA for the next couple of years, the thing that I'm kind of working on at the moment, a buddy of mine have started a new business called Cultivate Audio Video. It is basically, so I talked about earlier the idea of getting started in production kind of in churches. Mm-hmm. And the sad fact is most churches do production really poorly. It's something they do every week, but it's real bad most of the time. So we are trying to create a way to fix that problem. So what Cultivate is, right now it's basically we just sell equipment. We've become wholesalers and we're selling equipment, but we are consulting with churches so that they can get the equipment they need and not spend a ton of money on stuff that they don't need that they think they need, number one. So we're trying to help budgets in that way with churches so they can spend that money in better ways for ministries and that kind of stuff. And then eventually we're hoping to build a training program where we can actually go into churches and sit down with their tech teams and teach them how to run sound and teach them how to EQ correctly and teach them how to do video well. And
that's exciting. That's really exciting.
So it's kind of something that we've wanted to do for a long time and we haven't really had the resources to do it. But since we're now actually both doing full-time production, we are being given the resources to kind of make these things work.
Yes, so, wonderful. Yeah. So what are you proudest of, Phil Brangers?
Right now, I'm definitely the proudest of my son. So a year ago, we brought a four-year-old kid that weighed hardly anything and was basically the size of a one-and-a-half-year-old kid into our house with some physical problems. He wasn't able to walk. He wasn't able to really do anything. And you fast forward a year, he's grown about 12 inches. He's gained about 15 pounds. He can now walk with the use of a walker. He can carry on a conversation in English. He's in school. He has a little girlfriend. He's just as close to a normal everyday American kid as it gets. So it's just been really cool to watch him grow and change over the last year. And that's definitely been the biggest thing for me over this last year.
Yes, I certainly understand. Congratulations. Phil Brangers, what a great pleasure being with you today. We so much appreciate you sharing the highlights of your life journey. And I know that our listeners have learned lessons that will help them on theirs. So how do those listeners connect with you?
The easiest way is offbrandmedia.com. It is basically a company I tried to build several years ago and went nowhere. So it is now basically just a blog. But all my information is on there. Pictures I take are on there. Stuff I'm doing is on there. It's where all my stuff goes on the internet. So yeah, just the easiest way to find me.
Good, good. Listeners know you can go to discovertalentpodcast.com. Go to our podcast section and look up Phil Brangers and get the highlights of this fine interview as well as that link. So that's an easy one-two process. Thanks, listeners around the world, for joining us as always. You know, we have an ebook, What Do Highly Successful People Actually Do to Succeed? 12 Proven Career Building Strategies to Help You Do What You Love. Phil talked about some of those strategies very eloquently today. Hope you'll take advantage of it. It's free. It's the thinking of great thinkers in these fields for many, many decades. The lessons have helped millions of people. So take a look at it, if you will. You can also subscribe for free to this podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. We'd love for you to do that if you like the content. We'd love for you to be a part of our tribe. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them, and we cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive. We thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.